This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell for the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Kate Foster, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Now, let me introduce Kate. She's a children's book writer. She writes books about friends, family, and dogs. She's originally from southeast of England, now lives on the beautiful Gold Coast, God's country, they say, don't they?
They don't
believe so. She lives up there with her family and her rescue dogs, of course. She loves eating cake, reading books, and watching cooking programs on TV. We are very similar.
Yeah, are we?
Yeah, we are.
BFFs.
We absolutely are. So Kate's here today to talk to us about her new book and, of course, what's it called? It's called Pause.
It is, yes, Pause. Short, sweet, simple, can't forget it.
Talk to me about Pause.
Okay, so Pause is middle grade. Yeah. So kind of that, 8 to 12, I guess, but obviously we know with kids the reading comprehension is vast. It's a very sort of quiet book, I guess, about an 11-year-old boy who is autistic. And he desperately wants a friend. He's going to be graduating from primary school soon, desperately wants a friend before he starts high school. So the story is about this foolproof plan he puts together, 100% guaranteed, going to have a friend by the end of it. Obviously, as we know, books have to
have problems.
Yeah, exactly. Delves into all the things that go wrong. But what he does have is a friend who is a dog, his beautiful pet Spoodle or Cockapoo, depending on where you're from, who is one step ahead and is pretty much sorting things out in his own way.
Lovely story. I mean, it's so interesting. You know, I don't read a lot of children's books. I only read the ones that I'm going to talk to the authors of. But occasionally I do like picture books, actually. One of my favourite picture books is John Brown Rose and the Midnight Cat by Jenny Wagner, and I call my dog John Brown after that dog.
Oh, okay.
And what I find with kids' books is the simpleness of the story is the most compelling part, isn't it? Just the simple themes, aren't they? Oh.
Most definitely, yes. Yeah. I find that especially middle grade in particular, that's where my heart is. In fact, I don't think personally I've ever grown up from 12. I think that's maybe why I, you know, write for that audience. But I find that there's such an innocence and simplicity and purity to that age group. But you can venture into the more serious topics in life, some of the darker content. You can incorporate it, but it can still have this innocence and this purity. And I think that's just an incredible balance. And I think I read somewhere actually the other day that somebody said, you know, we talk a lot about our favourite books. And so many adults will say a book that they read during their middle grade years. It seems to be the time when reading has a huge impact on us. And there's something that we read which maybe redirects us in life or just touches us in some way.
And also affirms who we are as a person. I think because reading teaches us empathy, and it's also a window into somebody else's life. And very often you find that connection and that similarity in somebody else's story. I mean, the book that was completely formative for me outside of John Brown Rose and the Midnight Cat was Charlotte's Web. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's a book that I read very early on and has never left me, really. And I've gone back to reread it over the years. But I think it's that discovery of realizing that there are people out there that are like you, that think like you, that, you know, that I think is very, very important to informing a young person, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. It can just provide, books can just provide so much when you're young. And not just books. Like, I'm a firm believer that we should be encouraging our children to read anything. You know, I don't necessarily think it has to be books. You can do, you know, your graphic novels and your comics. You know, why not read articles online? If it's reading, for me, it's discovery and it's opening up new worlds. But yeah, there are so many books I remember reading. Strangely enough, a lot of fantasy. I don't write that. I don't. Obviously, at the time when I was that age, I wanted to read a lot of fantasy books. So I think perhaps, certainly with my life, perhaps that was to escape. I think to be able to escape into my brain and out of the real world. And I think that's something that's really important for children to be able
Just before you today, I was speaking to this fabulous Indigenous writer called Adam Thompson, who's written a collection of short stories. Fantastic. I don't know how old he is, but he's probably in his early 40s. First book he's written, but he told me he'd been a storyteller all his life. I mean, he's an orator. He told a good story. So storytelling's always been there. And at night, sometimes I'm reading to my nieces and nephew and I put down the books and then I tell them a story that I'm just making up in my head. Those are magic, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A number of stories just on long car journeys that I've told my children, and you are just, you know, totally winging it, just making it up as you go. But it's brilliant because, you know, sometimes their input will guide me on what comes next. So stories are just everywhere. They're all around us all the time.
So tell me, Kate, how did you come to writing?
Well, I've been writing forever.
Oh, because you're forever old.
Well, yes.
Very appropriate for a children's book writer.
I've been writing since as far back as I can remember, writing little stories, you know, when I was sort of, five, I don't know, something like that. I don't know what it was. Something stopped me sharing them. I don't know what point along the path it happened, but writing became a private thing. And I got nervous, I guess, shy. I was always a bit shy, still am. So I always thought, oh, you know, don't share. This is not something that someone like you could ever be. You could never write books. You could never be an author. You know, you're just doing it for fun. So where I never stopped writing, I guess, and kept it as a private thing, I just learned and I taught myself through reading, obviously, as well, how to kind of put together and structure a good, solid story. And I went on to have quite a few mentorships and joined reading groups and writing groups. And so, in a way, self-taught. I went on to do sort of online learning as well when I became a grown-up. So writing's just been a part of me, I think.
And so has it been your career? I mean, when did you have your first book published?
So this will be my traditional debut.
Oh, this is your debut?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not in my notes?
So I think I probably seriously thought about trying to be published, perhaps, 10 years ago, perhaps. Right. I had children and, you know, did odd jobs here and there as they
grew
up.
Well, you moved from one country to another.
Yeah, that was there as well. That was part of the growing process. But I think, and again, this was a conversation I had recently with somebody privately, that you have to be in the right place as a person, I think, to write certain books and to take certain paths. And I just don't think now, looking back, although I have regrets that I didn't share more of my work when I was younger, that maybe I just wouldn't have been ready. Sometimes I wonder if I'm ready now, to be honest. But, I think...
You're never ready. You just have to do it.
Yeah. Yes, maybe it's just having the courage, learning how to...
Absolutely.
Inner courage. But, so it was... It has been quite a journey to get to this point. Lots of ups and downs, probably more downs than ups. To have found the team at Walker...
So you finished writing this book and you'd written many, I guess.
Yes.
And why did you think this was the one to go out with?
I have no idea. I really don't. Something just felt right. I mean, I had a previous agent who I went on submission with a middle grade horror. Actually, I love writing kids horror. And that one, although it seemed to be very popular, didn't find a home. And while that was on submission, I was writing Pause. And so something about it, the story, for the first time ever, I'm not brilliant at drafting. I get very, very stressed. But something about the story just fell out of me. It just was right, and it was the right time. And I think after I'd finished it, it was quite a journey. It was quite therapeutic. It just felt like, yeah, this one feels a bit different. This feels a bit special. And I just hope other people accept it and see, you know, what's important about the story.
I've talked about this many times on this podcast, but it's all practice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right, all the time. And not just necessarily books. This is something as an editor that I've given advice to authors before. Just, you don't have to necessarily just be writing one story after another. You know, write blog posts, write magazine articles, write poetry, write anything, write things that you're not going to share. Just write. And I do feel reading is, you know.
Yeah, writing and reading, absolutely. Just getting back to just write and write anything. There's a lovely author called Candace Fox. She writes crime fiction, adult crime fiction. She's fantastic, and she lives here in Sydney. And I follow her on Facebook. I've had her in a couple of times for a podcast. She's a really lovely speaker. But she just runs, very generously runs, I think it's half an hour a week, just on Facebook, you know. Mm-hmm. And she says to people, just come write with me. And the way it works is all they're doing is tuning into Facebook, and they're all just sitting there writing. And I think, wow, sometimes, and she gets good numbers. And I'm thinking, what is it? I think it's just writing and having a beginning and end and being in a group, I guess, and sharing ideas and asking questions and getting motivated, right?
Oh, absolutely. And they do a lot of similar things on Twitter. They have writing sprints or write sprints or 5 a.m. writing club. And it's just for anybody. You just rock up and you join in and you get, look at the hashtag and you see other people who are writing at that time as well. And it could be like just half an hour, like you say, just a very sort of quick, this is all the time I've got today. But I think knowing that other people are in the same place and they're, you know, tapping out these words, it makes you feel like a sense of belonging, I guess.
Because it's a solitary occupation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't suit everyone to do it solitary. So I actually quite like when I'm writing, when I'm drafting, to not really read much and not really talk to many people because I just get very easily distracted and new ideas come along and it's like, oh my gosh, let's do this one. So for everybody, I think some people need other people to keep them motivated, I guess, hold them accountable as well for the things. Oh yes, I'm going to write 1,000 words today. And they need someone to go, did you?
So, I do that with projects. If I'm going to do something, like I'll say, oh, if I'm going to break some bread tonight, I have to tell a couple of people because then that'll make me do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody's going to say, how was the bread? that's right.
You know, very sensible.
It is very sensible. Okay, so tell me, why did you come to Australia?
Oh, wow. Well, my brother lives here. He moved out a long time ago. And when I first met my now husband, he had lived here previously as well. Both, love it, Australia, you know, we belong there. My husband brought it up with me and said, you know, would you consider moving to Australia? And I'm a very family orientated person. So at the time, I didn't have any children, but I was like, oh gosh, no, I couldn't possibly leave my mum and dad. So yeah, we kind of put it on the back burner, but there was always a draw. And then we had started to have children. And then my dad became quite poorly. And I think it made me realise that, you know, you do only live once, you know. So why don't we just go and say, listen, let's go for a year. Let's go see how it goes, see if we like it. And, you know, it'll be an adventure. It'll be marvellous. And we have never left.
And so the adventure continues.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope for a long, long time. And, you know, the opportunities here for my children, the way of life, you know, I'm certainly never going to knock England. It's a beautiful country, beautiful people. Yeah. You know, I had a wonderful childhood there. But here, there's just something different. There's a freedom that I feel here and an acceptance. People do seem to be more accepting. I don't know if that's all of Australia, certainly on the Gold Coast, such a transient community. There's always people coming and going, so many different races, and it's just marvellous.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How do you think a sense of place affects your writing? Do you think you would have been a different writer if you'd stayed in England?
Yeah, I think probably. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I believe that everything that happens to you affects your writing and what you write and how you approach your writing. So, yeah, so 100%, I think where you live, even just the places you've travelled on holiday, I think it can give you new perspectives and definitely influence what you write and why you write, actually, as well.
So you've written about a character with autism. Did you have your own experience of that?
Yeah, talk to absolutely. Me about that. So my youngest son is autistic. Mm-hmm. He was diagnosed, well, he was, I think we've always known he was autistic.
And can you tell me how that presents?
Yeah, absolutely. He was, as a little, I'm talking very little, so kind of at 18 months, huge speech delays. I think that's one of the things that they say. Just before I go on, I just want to say that, you know, I don't speak for everybody. So no. These are just my experiences, and I wouldn't want to speak for everybody. So yes, his huge speech delays, very little eye contact.
Was he your first or your second?
Third.
Oh, third. So you'd known, you'd seen, you had some experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And my mum is actually a paediatric nurse. Right. So she's she never switches off. The nurse is always on duty.
Yeah, they know.
we kind of noticed that there was just other very focused play, just small signs like that. So we went to see a paediatrician. Like, his life wasn't affecting his life until he started kindy in the UK. And then we knew that there were problems. He was not coping with change. So when they finished one task and moved on to another, he didn't cope. And there were lots of little things like that the staff were reporting back to me. So I think we knew that he needed a bit more support. So we went to see a paediatrician who didn't really help, didn't diagnose, said, oh, maybe, maybe not. So, oh, you know, fine, whatever. So it wasn't until when we moved out here and he started school that we realised he was not progressing very well. He was not happy. Life was incredibly stressful for him. And so he had some speech therapy, and that's where it sort of came to, let's do an assessment because I think he needs help. So that's what we did. And it's been the best thing we did for him. Some children float through life absolutely fine. They're autistic, but they don't need that diagnosis. They're fine.
Why do you think that made the difference?
I think because he needed that a lot more one-on-one at school. Mm. He needed someone to recognise. He's not the kind of child that has sort of external meltdowns, so it's not obvious that he's not coping or a situation is stressful. It's all very internal, so he literally shuts down completely. So he went missing at school as well, where he didn't want to go into the class and wouldn't tell anybody. So he just went missing. So that happened a couple of times as well. So it was dangerous, I guess. There was some real dangers looming for him. And I can't say we've never looked back. The school have been just incredibly supportive. He's looked out for.
Jane, who works in my office, who you might have had a few dealings with, she's wonderful, and she's got two grown-up children. I don't know if either of them got autism. I don't know that. I know that one of them's got dyslexia, but she calls autism a superpower.
Yeah.
And she's so wonderful in the way she speaks about it. And, you know, I only heard that for the first time recently and I thought, yeah. Wow, that's a different perspective, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some people don't like to look at it that way because actually being autistic is hard. It's yeah. incredibly hard work. I recently got a diagnosis. So I've reanalyzed my entire life. And I only found out that I was autistic because I was very anxious. I had terrible anxiety and felt very depressed. And I think that's often a way as how it presents as an adult. If you've gone through your life yeah. without realizing you're autistic and you've struggled, but you've put on this mask and you've thought, okay, well, this is how I have to act. This is how everybody acts. Otherwise, I'm just weird. It can reach, well, pretty much catch up with you when you become an adult, and that then it begins to present as depression. And I don't think, obviously, it's still quite a new thing. A lot of the public think of autism, they'll think of Rain Man, you know, of these very, very few examples in the media. And though, yes, of course, some autistic people present that way, it's enormous spectrum. And obviously, that's why they call it a spectrum.
I have read somewhere that that women are better at hiding it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's a case of being excellent at hiding and doing, as women, to be honest with you, and just being how we are expected to behave in society. But I think it's a case of it hasn't always been easy to pick up autism in girls because a lot of the ways it presents can be considered pretty normal. Reading, for example, love of animals. You know, these are things which, oh, that's just regular likes, you know.
That's describing me, yeah.
Exactly. I think it's becoming more recognised now that girls because I think that at the moment, statistics do show that boys are far more, there's more boys who are autistic basically than girls. But actually, it's because the girls haven't been diagnosed. So a lot of research is going into that, a lot of learning, and an awful lot of women in their 30s and 40s being diagnosed. So they've gone through their whole life not knowing, just being trying to sort of fit in and do what everybody else is doing. And then all of a sudden it hits them, can't cope.
What prompted your diagnosis? Was it?
Well, I went to, I was a bit depressed, I think. Not really, I was a bit lost. Just not in a good place in general without going into too much detail. So I knew it was time to speak to somebody, I think, and just say, look, listen, I'm not in full mental health right now. So I started to see somebody and discovered from that point that although I was depressed, I was actually incredibly, had terrible social anxiety, which led to more discussions and questionnaires and all of this conversation. So have you ever considered that maybe you're autistic? And I was like, well, actually, yes, I have, but, you know, never sort of pursued it because, and that's how it came about. And it's taken me a while to, I guess, own that. Because I think a lot of autistic women feel like they're trying to get attention or they're faking it. You know, I think that's the kind of reaction they probably had from people.
Really?
Why
would you be faking something?
Well, that's the strange thing, isn't it? For attention, I guess. I don't know. Women are always getting in trouble for wanting attention. So I think it's taken me a long time to kind of say, yeah, you know what, you are, and it's okay. And I want to talk more openly about it now because I want children and other adults, I guess, to feel comfortable and say, yeah, you know what, it's all right. You know, we are still human.
Well, you've just published a book. You've had a career. I mean, you know, it seems to me that once autism is recognised and treated, if you like, through acknowledgement, through therapy, through whatever, it's just a normal life, isn't it? Or whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
It is normal, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's important that society begins to recognise it and be comfortable to make adaptations for autistic people.
Yeah.
You know, instead of making or not letting them in or, making them feel like they're odd or weird, you know, actually saying, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll just accommodate you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it came to writing and writing a book, when you think about characters, I mean, it's not like you're writing a character that's autistic. You're writing what you know, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I wanted to write an autistic character because that was just doing regular things, that was just living. Rather than like writing about autism, I just wanted to write this character. Yeah, they're autistic, but look, you know, this is the things that they're good at and they do, and they're just a person. So yeah, very much lived experience. I do find that people often get the wrong end of the stick when they say, well, write what you know, because that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, you just have to, if you're an astronaut, you can only write about being an astronaut or you know, it's emotional experience as well. It's it's a whole kind of spectrum of different experiences that we can write about. So yeah, for me, it was more than just writing an autistic character. It was writing a lot of kind of parallels with my life.
Absolutely. I think we've just run out of time, but I want to say congratulations on the book. It's called Paws. It's for middle grade. And if you love animals,
definitely.
It's a great story. well, should I ask you, or are you writing another?
Well, there are things I don't think I'm allowed to talk about yet.
Great.
I am writing more middle grade, yeah.
good. I want to see more. Thank you so much, Kate Foster. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.